This weekend, the coming weekend, the weekend before Thanksgiving, is always the start of the traditional gun deer season in Wisconsin. Of course, there are other seasons for deer hunting that started earlier, bow hunting and what have you. But the traditional seasons, 9-day season, which we probably are always going to have, is always the weekend before Thanksgiving, and then it concludes the Sunday following Thanksgiving. More than 600,000 people in Wisconsin take time to reconnect with friends and nature and family. Gary Engberg with me now is a professional guide, angler, outdoor writer. He's an avid conservationist and sportsman, advocates for getting children and kids involved in the outdoors. And Gary, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming by and being with us today.
Thank you, Larry. It's always a pleasure.
We just talked with Travis DeWitz about his photo book, Blaze Orange. What are some of your memories of deer hunting over the years that stand out for you?
Well, kind of, I think one of the major differences, Larry, has been that it used to be going up north to mm-hmm. deer hunt. You'd go to the northern part of the state, and that kind of has changed now. You know, we have old growth forest up there. The deer population has migrated south to the farmland areas, and you don't see people. I mean, it used to be schools would close. Yeah. Everyone would go to their deer camp, no matter where it was, whether they'd bring them the tent with them or whether they had an old shack or a trailer to hunt out of. And they would usually spend the whole 9 days, you know, hunting. And it was a tradition, camaraderie. You know, there's many different things you can say. You know, a lot of people would go with groups, and maybe they didn't even hunt that much, and they would be the cook. But it would be get together, you know, play cards, tell stories, you know, just do a little bonding, and that's male and female and everyone involved. And, you know, it's been a great tradition in Wisconsin. I mean, you can go back chronologically, you know, I think it's 140-some years of deer seasons, and see really what's happened. And people don't realize that, you know, we have more deer now than we did in, up until the 1930s and 40s.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, some of us still go up north, quote-unquote, go up north. My group, we're all, you know, here we are in Madison, but we're in the town of Barnes. That's 25 miles north and east of Hayward.
Well, it's also getting to where, you know, the group of guys, you know, the baby boomers are getting a little bit older, and you can't get away, and people pass away, and, you know, it's hard just to get those groups together like they have. And there happens to be a family that I've done some work with. They have the Wilderness Fish and Game Store up in Sauk City, the Lochner family, and they still have a traditional, you know, a deer shack on their farm. You know, they still come in from all over the country for deer season. You know, everything is planned out. People are in the same stands that they've been in for, you know, decades.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the same type of operation. And, you know, the hardest thing right now with hunting is trying to bring in the new young blood. And that's, you know, the DNR has done a real good job in promoting. And I'm talking about, beside hunting, you don't have to hunt, but even just the shooting sports. And the shooting sports are showing, you know, some increase. And matter of fact, a lot of women now are, you know, with a conceal and carry, and, you know, are learning how to shoot a gun. And I think that's fine, you know, as long as they're done safe and they do it, you know, and learn the rules and have someone, you know, a good mentor, you know, teaching them things. But, you know, overall, you know, guys now go hunting when they can.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of, you don't see people taking the whole week off.
Yeah. There's, I'm one of those that would love to take the whole week off, but I'm working and I've got this radio show, but some of the guys still in my group, there's about 8 of them that'll be there the whole week. And so,
well, those are the retired ones probably.
Yeah. Most of those guys, you're right. You're right. Because they can even get away with staying and missing Thanksgiving at home.
Yeah, but the thing too is that people don't have to. You don't have to go that far to find deer. I mean, go out in the arboretum sometime.
Yeah, for sure. Take a look out. Well, you can't hunt about there, but you can go out there and look and see deer for sure. Gary Engberg, our guest, talking with him about Wisconsin's fall hunting season, and we're also going to talk about ice fishing as well. Actually, the hook and line season is still on if your lake hasn't frozen over.
Well, you know, our temperature right now should be 45 degrees is the average high.
Yeah.
So that shows how much below we are. And I usually don't winterize my boat until later on because I try and get out a lot in November. And I've always wanted to fish December in, you know, the southern part of the state where you can fish muskies, you know, all through the, you know, the whole month. But it hasn't happened with what the weather's been the last few years. But, you know, fishing is good. I mean, your fish realize by, you know, the number of hours of daylight. They know what's coming. They know the water's getting colder. There's less hours of daylight. And so they go on feeding friends. You know, they start bulking up for the fall, and about any species do that. It's just a matter of finding your fish. You know, you'll find a lot of them concentrated earlier where they can find some green weeds, and then they will move deeper. And, I mean, you'll find crappies, you know, now in 30, 40 feet of water. But, you know, your major predators, you can find a lot of them probably in less than 10 feet. And, you know, coming into Madison today to do the show with you, Larry, I happened to go by Brittingham Park, and there was a guy out there ice fishing. And that's one thing that, you know, there's kind of a macho thing about trying to be the first one on the ice. And you know, fishing is better because the fish will usually be where you caught them, you know, the last time in the fall. They'll probably be there still when you have ice. But, you know, you like to follow some things like at least have 4 inches, you know, follow a path that, you know, that people have taken before ahead of you. Don't fish alone. Don't bring children and dogs with you now. Always have a cell phone. If you're fishing alone, you know, tell people where you're going, that you're going to be out there, you know. And, you know, I mean, some of the flotation devices and even the clothing and stuff made now, you know, make it a lot more enjoyable to be outside.
Oh, absolutely. And it's, you know, it's not the good time when I had this friend who always said, well, I like to go out when I can just kick a hole open with my heel. And I think the ice is just a little bit too thin if you could do that.
Well, and also, I mean, if you don't have the proper clothing and if you're not warm, that can ruin a good hunt and that can ruin, you know, fishing too.
As well.
You know, you got to be comfortable.
Talking a little deer hunting, a little ice fishing today with Gary Engberg, professional angler and fishing guide. Join in with your questions or comments, or maybe you've got a great story to tell. I'd love to hear it at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly, our Facebook page is The Larry Mueller Show, and we'd certainly love to hear from you as well. Go to our Facebook page and you can do it right there. You know, the rules on deer hunting
are very confusing.
Yeah, and I was talking with some people about it, and the DNR types I talked to said, look, just where you hunt. Go look at the rules connected with where you hunt, because the rules are different depending on the part of the state you're in.
If you're looking, everyone make sure that you do have a rules and regulation booklet in your back pocket all the time. Look at it before opening day. Try and be familiar, you know, with the area where you're hunting and the rules there. And, you know, there's still, if you have any questions, I mean, the DNR has a fantastic website where you can, you know, that's a good search engine. Just, you know, it's dnr.wisconsin.gov. And you can put the search engine, put anything you want, and you can come up with an answer because with all the changes and all the different zones and, you know, last year's winter, you know, was hard on deer and northern deer and turkeys in northern Wisconsin. So it's mostly all bucks up there.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to have as many, you know, antlerless permits as you do. You have to get down the southern part of the state to get into those. But there's still plenty of deer out there. And, you know, the most important thing I just tell people is, you know, to make sure you're ready before. Don't be scrambling at the last moment. You know, get your deer clothes outside and hang them, you know. Make sure that you have all the things you need, some extra, you know, extra gloves, extra socks, you know, a hat in case it gets colder.
The little heater things that
they're the best in the world. Oh. I put a couple of them in each glove, and they make them for your boots. They make them for about every part of your body. Another thing, too, is make sure you have plenty of ammunition, because ammunition, there's been a lot of shortages, you know, in the last year, and you want to make sure that you have, you know, the caliber and grain bullet that you do want. But, and the other thing is, you know, the main thing that deer have such a sensitive smell, and they can really smell people. I mean, don't go out to your stand, you know. I mean, like I said, hang your clothes outside. Use some of the scent-free sprays they have or the scent-free clothing and suits. They work very well. Make sure that you spray stuff on your boots. because deer can pick up that scent anywhere. Don't go, don't be smoking or chewing tobacco or have all the smell from the morning breakfast on you when you go out to your, you know, your stand or wherever you're going to be hunting. You know, take these things into consideration. I would recommend having a cell phone with you, and you know, if you're in an area where you're driving, you're not, maybe you're sitting in the morning, driving in the afternoon, you know, make sure you know where people are, and you know, safety first is the main thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Gary Engberg, our guest today. Let's turn to Tom in Platteville. Tom, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to make a comment about the opening statement that the guest made about people going along in the capacity of perhaps photographer, cook. I personally am a non-hunter. I don't do that. But going as an auxiliary person with my son and my grandchildren has really allowed us to bond a lot better.
Yeah.
And I don't think that aspect should be overlooked.
Well, I know it's kind of going by the wayside, and that's why when you see people with a traditional deer camp where they do have people doing different things and, like, family members will come just to socialize, I mean, those are few and far between these days, and if you find one, they're great.
I echo Tom. I mean, you know, I'm thinking over my own camp over the years. We've had guys who've hunted a long time and then said, you know what, this year I'm not even going to go out. I'm just going to come up and I'll
hang around.
I'll hang around. I'll cook. I'll, you know, I'll just do some of that, some of those things, and just maybe do a little ice fishing and have fun that way. And those folks are welcome. I mean, love having those kind of those friends and family members there.
I mean, like the main thing is, I mean, there's a lot of bonding, and that still can happen. You know, you don't have to, you know, be up there for the whole 9 days. And it's just great to get people together that maybe don't see each other, come in from out of state, you know. And then also, too, there's many programs now the DNR has for people who've never hunted before, and they're trying to get older people involved. They have discounted licenses. You know, you can get out there for about nothing. There's mentor programs for not just children, also for adults.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Tom. Mark in Conover. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, sir. Yes. Or good morning still. I worked for a natural resource agency for more than 35 years. So I have seen over the years a number of deer camps, which when I first started were very traditional. The old wall tents, everybody came in 2 days before or so, and they stayed the entire week. Maybe went home for Thanksgiving, and a lot of that changed over the years. A lot of it was more cabins being built, groups of individuals purchasing cabins instead of that traditional old-time, let's really rough the heck out of live in the cold for a week. But the other thing I wanted to say was I'm a little uneasy about the opening statement also regarding old-growth forest and characterizing it with a broad brush as though everything up north here is nothing but old-growth. While I was holding, I just had a deer, a six-pointer standing on Deerskin Road east of Eagle River in front of me, watching me. And last night I had 9 does and fawns and 2 bucks right near my house. So
there's plenty of deer still up north, and I mean you do have a lot of logging operations where you get new young browse, which really helps your deer and your grouse too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yes. There are a considerable number of timber sales east of Eagle River between there and Florence in northern Forest County currently, probably more than 20.
Those are great areas to look for to go hunting.
Yes, sir, it is.
And I think a lot of the paper companies and the people that own these will give you permission to hunt.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Mark, you're exactly right that there still are deer up there. And in the northern part of the state. And we'll talk some more about that. We need to take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we'll be back with Gary Engberg. Gary's going to be with us right up until 12:30. So you stay with us. We'll be back right after the news. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. You know, our natural resources and wildlife in Wisconsin aren't just beautiful to look at. We have this great abundance of wildlife in the state, and there's plenty there to put in the freezer. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network as we visit with professional guide and angler and outdoor writer Gary Engberg. He's an avid conservationist and sportsman, advocates for getting kids involved in the outdoors. Gary, great to have you back. Thanks so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry.
Lots of fun. And you may have a question about this year's deer hunt or about fishing. We're talking a little ice fishing with him as well. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to our Facebook page. Our Facebook page title is The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a photo or a question or comment right there. And if you got a good story to tell, we'd love to hear those as well. Dave in Fort Atkinson has something for us. So let's go to Dave. Hi, thank you for calling, Dave.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I found a 1929 Wisconsin permit to transport a deer by railroad. And I was wondering, back in the 20s, what was the overall, I mean, did people take the rail to go up to the north woods of Wisconsin to hunt? Were cars that prevalent for hunting back then? Any idea on that subject?
Yeah, there certainly was rail traffic to northern Wisconsin, wasn't there, Gary?
Yeah, there were deer trains that would go up there and, take, specifically, I think they even add on trains during the season to take the people up there to their areas. And, that's how a lot of people got to northern Wisconsin. And like the gentleman said, I think you did have to have a special permit to transport the deer back on the train.
Yeah, but it was one way. I'm telling you, the roads back...
The roads were not...
outstanding roads. And furthermore, the automobiles weren't all that hot either. So to get to the far north, the train was a good way to go. So there you have it, Dave.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And I'm trying to think of the book by Wilgang, On the Hunt, I believe is the title of the book. I'm trying to remember the exact title, but I think it's On the Hunt, and the author is Wilgang. And Dave, if you take a look at that one, that book is a great book on the history of deer hunting in Wisconsin, and I'm positive that there's information in there on the trains that would take hunters to the northern part of the state to hunt deer. So let's turn to Tom in Mequon. Hi, Tom. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Great. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Well, I've noticed a trend in the last, I'll say, 20, 30 years where people used to be able to hunt on old local farmers' land or other people who have a lot of land, but now that's coming to a stop where these people, I don't know if they're afraid of being sued or they want the deer for themselves or they're against people shooting deer, have closed off their land. So especially in the southern part of the state, it's packed with deer, and yet there's no access to get at those deer.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is that, like you did say, liability might be one reason in there. But, I've always found out that, if you don't wait until the last week or the week or two before the deer season, if you go around and talk to enough farmers or private landowners and, maybe help them out. I mean, we used to, come and help guys bay hail to, hay to, hunt on their land or to, hunt birds in their land and, or we'd drop off some deer sausage or we'd give them a pheasant or we'd give them, something, give them a tenderloin from the deer and, and communicate with these people, throughout the year, not just during the few days before deer season. And I don't know, I've had pretty good luck with asking people and, they don't know who I am, but, just being nice and presenting yourself, I think can gain you access to a lot of these private lands.
Yeah. There still will be lands that you're not going to get on.
Oh, no.
You're absolutely right about not doing it at the last minute.
And people don't, people are concerned about, about safety. If you have animals or cattle, about opening and closing gates, fences. There's a lot of things involved. But I think if you just talk to people and they see that you're a normal person, you can get some access.
Yeah, but a good point. Thank you very much for calling, Tom. I'm glad you brought it up because it does point out that you need to get out there and get out there early. And also, you were talking about Gary, about some of the public hunting lands. Now, you're going to see probably a lot of hunters on those lands, but...
Yeah, I'm sure. That, I mean, they'll be jammed, and not to regress, but this year on the opening of pheasant season was the 18th of October, and I live very close to the Blackhawk and Mazamani public hunting grounds, and that's 5,000 acres. And I've never seen more people out hunting on an opening day in my life. So there are a lot of people out there. I mean, it's, you know, on the weekends it's tough because there usually are people, but I was out yesterday and froze my rear end off, but it was, you know, we saw pheasants and there wasn't another person out. And I mean, just in my travels around on public land, I mean, lots of deer sign I've been seeing. I didn't see a lot of deer in October. I didn't see a lot of deer the first week in November, but like now the deer are running around everywhere. You see, I've seen deer recently, you know, 12 noon and standing, a big buck standing in the middle of a field, you know, looking for a doe. So the deer are very, very active. I think that should continue at least into the deer season. I mean, not every deer starts running, you know, the same day. So you're going to have a lot of, especially, you know, your younger and bucks will probably be trying to pick up what was left over from the dominant one. But, you know, there's a lot of deer on the public lands. I mean, you can't get out of your car and walk 100 yards and expect to hunt. I mean, you have to go back in some areas and you have to do a little research. And, you know, deer are going to, you know, they'll become, as soon as people are out in the woods, they'll become very nocturnal. And, you know, and they know the hardest place to get to or the littlest woodlot where they know they're safe, they're going to be at. So you have to, you know, do a little bit of, you know, study, get out there and walk around, and you'll see a lot of deer sign right now.
And I actually remember, you know, you're making, you're echoing comments that I saw in an article written by a guy who has, a story about a guy who has killed many record bucks and all of them on public land. And his idea is to get back. He said, once you go a certain distance in, you suddenly have lost all 99% of the hunters.
Yeah, that's true, I believe. Or, you know, where there isn't a path that's been well-worn.
Yeah, where there isn't a well-worn path, you're going to find maybe some success. And again, the book On the Hunt was the book that I was trying to remember by Robert Wilgang. Judith just reminded me. That is a great book on the history of deer hunting in Wisconsin. He's a very good writer. And we actually had him on the show when the book came out, had a wonderful conversation with him. So it was great fun. Tomorrow's the end of this turkey season, is it not?
The 20th.
Oh, it's the 20th, okay.
The 20th is.
And
I've been seeing lots of wild turkeys. Matter of fact, I mean, you know, they must be with this year's poults, you know, which are the younger turkeys. And I've been seeing groups of 20, 30, you know, around. So there's, you know, I don't think as many people bother going out in the fall turkey season as they do in the spring.
Well, here, I live in Madison, right in town, and I, on my back lawn, just for fun, I have Margaret, my plastic hen decoy, turkey decoy, and I have a picture I just took yesterday of two turkeys communing with Margaret, my plastic turkey,
yeah,
on the back lawn. And there were actually another four or five that sort of flew off, but those two just stayed right on my backyard.
Well, I feed a tremendous amount of birds, Larry, and when the winter gets tough like we've had the last few years and you get some deep snow, I mean, I have wild turkeys come into my backyard. I have deer, I have pheasants and everything, because if you got to start scratching for food, it gets difficult, and they find out where the bird feeders are and where there's some feed.
Yeah, and they're there. Well, let's talk a little bit more. We talk a little bit more about deer hunting, but also talk a little bit more about ice fishing, too. One of the things I kind of like about ice fishing, all right, it's cold, but it's egalitarian in some ways, because you don't have to have a boat.
Nope.
You can get by on a fairly limited budget. You don't need a whole lot of money to go ice fishing.
You can buy a decent rod and reel that's going to be good for anything for probably $25-$30.
Yeah, and an auger to dig a hole.
And now everyone's going to these power augers. You can find a lot of the old Moras, you know, the old blue ones. You can find a lot of those at garage sales.
Yeah, and they still work.
They still work great. All you got to do is make sure you got sharp blades.
Yeah, just got to have sharp blades. So what are we, this time of the year, as the season goes, as the ice fishing season gets started, what do you do?
Well, usually I'll try and, like I said earlier, if I can find some green weeds, that's going to attract fish for sure, and it's going to bring in your bait fish, which will bring in your other fish. You know, your bluegills and your perch and your crappies will move in and be feeding there, and they're going to bring in the predators. They'll bring in the northerns and the walleyes, you know, and you can find most of them, you know, earlier, I think, in the same place where they were in the fall. And then a lot of them will go into deeper, you know, they'll go into a winter state where they're not too active, and you almost got to put your bait right on their nose sometimes in the winter. And you can, you know, with the cameras now and everything, you can, you know, it's amazing how you can, you know, you can see your jig with your mousey or spike on it, and you can see the fish come right up to it. And sometimes, you know, they'll be an inch away and just stare at it and then just take off, you know.
Yeah, it's amazing the equipment. And I wanted to actually talk about that for both hunting and fishing, because the equipment I'm looking at, the equipment that I'm using now, compared to what I, you know, in terms of the clothing that I wear, in terms of the boots, and I just bought a new pair yesterday or the day before. These things are, you know, going to keep my feet warm in really, really cold temperatures.
There's no excuse right now for being cold out there, because, like, you know, we were saying, there's so many new products being made to keep you warm with the, you know, they got the heated suits now even, you know, that are battery operated, and they're supposed to be real nice. You know, you can put the warmers in your boots. You can put them in your gloves. You can put them anywhere on your body. The polypropene, I still like a lot of natural fibers, and I still try and dress in layers. I like cotton. I like silk. I like wool. I like down. But that polypropene is still good, you know, and, you know, you could get yourself in real good shape where you can be very, very comfortable. And that's not even being, if you're ice fishing, you know, in a shanty. That's like sitting on your pail.
Yeah. Gary Egberg, our guest, do you have a question or comment or maybe a story to tell us, be it fishing or deer hunting? I'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can post on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you can post your questions or your comments there. And certainly we'd love to hear from you. This harsh weather, you know, you just wonder how, you know, it's turned so cold so fast. What impact it's going to have on our wildlife here in the state, our deer, for example.
Well, last year was a tough one, you know, especially up north. I mean, I know that there was, you know, they found a lot of, you know, dead deer and turkeys, because turkeys had gone outside their range, you know, and had moved up even into, you know, the Vilas County, northern Wisconsin areas, which is a little bit too far north for them, especially with the snow, because, you know, they have to pick. And, I mean, when the snow gets, you know, a couple feet deep, they have trouble feeding. So there was, you know, some winter kill there. But most animals, I mean, they it's amazing, and, you know, how they learn to adapt. And, I mean, I am amazed with the birds that I see. You know, you'll see little chickadees or juncos, you know, out there in, you know, 20 below weather, and they're out there, and, you know, and you don't know how they do it. And, I mean, but they do. And deer have a, you know, have a very, you know, nice coat, and they build up those fat layers. That's why they eat so much during, you know, during the summer and the fall, because they're trying to build up that fat layers, because they don't want to take a chance, you know, of being a cold winter and getting down there. But, you know, you'll see, as the snow gets deeper, you'll see a lot of areas where you see that the deer have even reverted to eating bark off trees, you know, when it gets high.
Gary, we have John and Cameron up next. John, thanks for calling. Hi.
Yeah, hello. I was just listening, and I found very interesting. Your guys were talking about back in the 1920s, where, like, the trains would bring everybody north for the deer hunting. Now, I live up here in Cameron, Barron County, farther north, you know, and there is kind of a hunting heritage up there. But just curious, did those trains stop at every town? Or they, you know, like, would somebody, like, say, lease the train to take them to a certain lodge? Just, you know, any ideas how that all worked back then?
I think they went to general areas, and I mean, yeah, there were general stop offs where they would, you know, drop people off. I mean, I'm not sure exactly how long or how many the capacity of the trains right there, and I'm looking forward to doing a little bit of reading on that myself.
Yeah, I just found that fascinating, the way, because I understand, like, back then, the automobiles and the roads, I could just imagine, but I just kind of, you know, sitting here thinking about, you know, if opening weekend coming up like on Friday, where they drop them off on a Friday and pick them up again like the day before Thanksgiving or however the seasons worked or whatever. That's just totally interesting. Yeah.
You know, you hope someone up there had a car. You know, you just would, you only need one vehicle to get people around. But people would bring enough, you know, provisions and food, and hopefully they'd be eating some venison, you know, and they'd stay up there the whole, you know, the whole period. Like we said, schools would close and everything stopped during deer season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some
major,
of the towns, I'm pretty sure, I mean, that as I'm trying to remember exactly how that worked, but I mean, if you had a resort or if you had a place or even a town where people were going to be staying once they got there, they would actually come and get them at the depot and at the train stops and take them to where they needed to go.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
They would pick them up like in a horse and wagon probably thing, too, and take them to the hunting lodges wherever they're staying to them.
Or a horse and sleigh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, that's totally interesting. Totally interesting.
Maybe
yeah.
we'll get some more comments out of this. Bob Wilding was listening. He'd probably be calling in and let us know. Thanks, John, for calling. Janice in Antioch, Illinois. And it's your turn. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Down on the old Chain of Lakes area.
Well, my story isn't such a good one. But it might bring to mind some people, they better get permission to do some deer hunting if they're going to be on somebody else's property. I have 5 acres up in Salem, Wisconsin. And at one point we brought 10 trees, evergreen trees, up to the property. Mm-hmm. It was maintained and cut and everything for a long time. And then after a while, we kind of just let it grow. Went up to check on it. Somebody would cut down evergreen trees for Christmas trees. One tree had 3 stems that weren't cut, and it grew up and to be a nice big tree of, you know, 20 feet. Went up there about 5 years ago to do some more trimming and clearing. And that tree was shaved on the backside where somebody had a deer stand up in the 3 stems. All the boughs were still laying on the ground. Went to the back of the property, and in some oak trees were embedded spikes. Found 2 more deer stands, urine, bait, apples, all kinds of things, and found out it was our neighbor. When I had called the police and said, please come and, you know, help me get this guy and whoever it was when we had to hunt him down, and came out with another deer stand, and the police says, why don't you be a good neighbor and let him have his deer stand back? But I never got compensated for messing up my trees or destroying a tree that had been cut down and regrown. Oh. I'm just so angry about.
There are, you know, and I think they are a lot of isolated instances of that happening. I mean, I think most conservation-minded and good hunters do know where they are hunting, do ask for permission, but you're always going to find people who don't, and especially if they know you're an absentee landlord and you're not there all the time, you know, they'll probably try and take advantage of it. But, you know, contact your DNR because they'll track the people down and do the best they can, because trespassing is a major, major, major problem, and it happens everywhere.
Yeah, and one of the problems or one of the issues is, as now our caller, and Janice owns 5 acres, and that's a nice piece of property, and it may have been purchased, you know, who knows how it was purchased, but a lot of times these are there's a history of hunting on a particular property, and somebody buys a chunk of property, and the people. Not, and they shouldn't, but they think, well, I've always hunted there, so I'm just going to keep hunting there.
I mean, you should still even have permission if you're retrieving a deer that goes over on someone's property.
Absolutely.
You know, you got to find the landowner and say, hey, my deer is down. Can I go get it and retrieve it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, Janice, you are absolutely right. And it's, you know, why would she ever...
I would make sure, too, that you heavily post your land. I mean, you know, post it and, you know, make sure you sign your, you know, the no trespassing, and you know, that may deter some people from it.
Yeah, you'd hope so. I thank you very much for bringing that bringing that up, Janice, because it's one reason why our earlier caller, you know, said, well, you know, it's hard to find land. Well, sometimes people aren't, landowners themselves aren't treated well, and
but
that's
it's there is plenty of land, and it's, I mean, if you look in, you know, on maps, the DNR land around the state is spread out, and there's good huntable land everywhere, and I don't think people should look down upon it. You know, the hunter and fishermen, you know, pay for all the, you know, the taxes, I think it's the Pittman-Robertson bill, they pay, you know, the taxes on all ammunition and guns and fishing equipment goes toward, you know, these properties. And, you know, the hunter and fishermen are paying for it. But to get back to ice fishing, you know, now I would try and fish for panfish. You know, you can, you don't even have to use live bait these days. They've come out with a lot of products. Gulp is made, you know, it's an artificial, you know, with a fish scent in it. All the different plastics you can use. And it's not like you kind of constantly get your hands wet where, you're rebaiting your hook. And with some of these products now, you can catch multiple fish, you know, on just, you know, one piece of bait. And I have a good friend, Bob Zauner from the Pancake House in Madison, and he uses nothing but artificials and does very, very well.
Well, here we are out of time. Gary, I know you've got a great website. What's the website?
My website is www.GaryEngbergOutdoors.com. Engberg is spelled E-N-G-B-E-R-G.
And we'll put a post up on my Facebook page. I think we may have a link. We already have a link.
There's fresh posts up there every day.
Gary, look forward to your next visit. Thank you so much for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, and be safe, everyone.
Gary Engberg, our guest, thank you very much for joining in today. Judith is going to be talking tomorrow with Public Television's chef, Christy Ross, about dishes for Thanksgiving. Then at 11:45, she'll take a look at urological cancers with a guest as well. Thanks for listening. Stay with us.